Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Maria Auler, Financial Analyst for InterCement. With me here today for a fireside chat on 2022 earnings, Paulo Diniz, our Chief Financial Officer, and Marcos Zangada, our Head of Corporate Finance and Planning. The presentation will be followed by a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation is available through the webcast link that has been provided to you in our registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call we will hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. A reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call, or the financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of InterCement's operating activities, and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2022 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations and actual results, and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings InterCement makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. InterCement disclaims any obligation to update information contained in these forward-looking statements, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the InterCement fourth quarter financial report for advanced discussions of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. Before starting our chat, I would like to emphasize that the comments on operating results will be based on our continuing operating activities. That means excluding our operation in Egypt sold last January. Now, moving to our chat. Paulo, it seems that despite an adverse macro environment, 2022 has been a great year for InterCement. Where do you see the company stand, and how should we see last year?
Maria, Zangari, and everyone, very good morning to you all. I guess it is no surprise to anyone that the fourth quarter of 2022 continued to present a macro environment full of uncertainty, with considerable high inflation, high interest rates, and shy economic growth. It was in this environment that priorities were set on managing costs and ensuring resilience so that we could have success in defending the position InterCement reached in 2021, as we stated our goal for the year at the beginning of 2022. In this environment, the fourth quarter of 2022 brought us a volume of 4.4 million tons, slightly below 1% the volume we booked in the last quarter of 2021. On a full-year basis, we accounted for sales volume of 17.8 million tons, a slightly increase of 0.3% in comparison to 2021. It should be noted that it was the second year since 2016 that InterCement exceeded the volume bar of 17 million tons in these geographies. Also important to say is that average price ex works was up by 16% to $88 per ton in comparison to the fourth quarter of 2021, and 18% up on a full year basis. Net sales of $409 million in the fourth quarter of last year represented a compression of 7%, mainly affected by the Argentinian expense depreciation, which was 20% in the fourth quarter of last year, vis-a-vis 4% in the fourth quarter of 2021. In fact, excluding Forex impact, sales would have grown by 17% in the quarter. On an annual basis, net sales reached $1.8 billion in 2022, an increase of 14% in comparison to the year before. Parallel to the top line, we should note that costs continue to be pressured by inflation, so that average cash cost, including freights, went up by 21% and reached $60 per ton, so that inflationary pressures were not fully passed to prices. Therefore, adjusted EBITDA reached $476 million in the year, a 5% increase over 2021, although EBITDA margin of 26% was 2 percentage points lower in comparison to 2021. On a quarterly basis, results were more favorable, as adjusted EBITDA rose 7% to $128 million in comparison to the fourth quarter of 2021, implying an EBITDA margin of 31%, 4 percentage points higher than the same quarter of previous year. Cash flow from operating activities came at $516 million for 2022, vis-a-vis $392 million for the year before. Quarterly cash flow presented a growth, as cash flow from operating activities came at $177 million, or $19 million up compared to the fourth quarter of 2021. Just to complete the overall picture, higher interest rates impacted by level of financial expenses and penalized free cash flow of $156 million in a year. Although still higher than the $54 million of 2021. Furthermore, cash from financial activities were further penalized in the year by dividends paid by Lumamed. Therefore, net debt came at $1,443 million, basically the same level of previous quarter, implying a financial leverage of 3x. Not that bad considering the dividends paid by Lumanegra and the jump in interest rates. So these would be my quick comments for the quarter and the full year of 2022.
Excellent, and thanks for this overview, Paul. When you talk about a top line of $490 million in the quarter, we are always curious about volumes and prices in the different geographies. Zangari, perhaps you can share some insights on this.
Yes, thank you, Maria, and good morning, everyone. Well, let's start with Brazil, where Intercement Brazil reached sales of $178 million in the quarter, so a 25% increase year over year. Volumes were slightly reduced by 0.8% in the quarter, mainly coming from weaker sales of clinker. On the other hand, cement sales of 2.1 million tons increased by 0.7%, better than the overall industry performance. In general, this positive outcome was mainly noticed in the South and Midwest regions, both driven by the favorable dynamics from the agribusiness. As far as price is concerned, Transmit Brazil was able to keep an average price of $70 per ton, level 27% higher in comparison to the fourth quarter of 2021. Mitigating the volume drop and cost pressures. Now looking at the perimeter of Argentina, Despite the delicate prevailing macroeconomic conditions, including inflation that closed the year at around 100%, households continue to see real estate as a way of to preserve the currency power. Therefore, Loma Negra posted a volume of 1.7 million tons in the fourth quarter 22, an increase of 1% year over year. Additionally, average price at $107 per ton, up 12% year over year, showed the company adequate capability in managing costs, inflation, effects, and prices, also using its distribution channels. Despite all that effort, the Argentine peso's depreciation led to a decrease of 28% in net revenues. Excluding Forex impact, sales would have grown 17% in the quarter. Moving to Africa's southern cone, I should start by highlighting that last quarter was similar to the previous ones, meaning that price increases offset the weaker activity level that translated into lower volumes, especially in Mozambique. So as you can see on page 6 of the presentation, we sold hopefully 600,000 tons in Africa in the quarter, which was 7% below the previous year. This drop was due to the market in Mozambique, where volumes declined 18% year over year in the quarter, reflecting the combination of low public expenditure in infrastructure with households' reduced disposable income, while in South Africa, volumes were relatively stable when compared to the fourth quarter 21. Now, talking about prices at our African operations. Our ex-works prices kept recovering and reached an average of $95 per ton, 6% up year over year in U.S. dollar terms, despite the devaluation of the rand, the local currency in South Africa. So disregarding it, on a like-for-like basis, prices increased by 17% in the quarter compared to the previous year, following a similar pattern of price increases in local currency in both countries of 17 and 16% in South Africa and Mozambique, respectively. This pricing movement was more than enough to offset the volume drop, as we may comment further on.
Thank you, Zangari. It was clear that the favorable price trend remained, perhaps not with the same strong pace as we saw before. Anyway, what maybe matters more than that is the proper balance between prices and costs for the whole industry in this current environment. Paulo, how does balance has reflected into EBITDA generation?
Yes, refreshing what we said, average cash cost of $60 per ton represented an increase of 21% year over year. Although thermal energy costs, mainly petrol costs, continued to be at a high level, other cost elements were also up, including raw materials, freight, electricity, and land power. However, on a positive note, we should also say that last month, petrol prices showed a reduction, although still at a higher level. The graph on page 8 is more telling about it, showing that last month the U.S. Gulf coke dropped further from $138 per ton in February to $106 per ton in March, which is a cost reference not seen since mid-2021, when it had read more than double in comparison to mid-2020. Therefore, the adjusted EBITDA margin of 26% in the year represented a compression of 2 percentage points vis-a-vis 2021. In absolute terms, adjusted EBITDA of $476 million for the year was 5% up year over year. So, all in all, a very interesting result despite the local currency devaluations. Meanwhile, in the quarter, adjusted EBITDA margin of 31% represented a 4 percentage point expansion in comparison to the fourth quarter of 2021, while adjusted EBITDA came at $128 million, a 7% increase over the fourth quarter of 2021. Looking at the different regions, in Brazil, prices increased, partially mitigated volume drop and cost pressure, so that Intercement Brazil EBITDA was at $49 million in the fourth quarter, compared to $25 million in the same quarter of previous year. EBITDA margin of 27% in Brazil was 9.7 percentage points up compared to the fourth quarter of 2021, and also higher than competition in this challenging macroeconomic environment. In Argentina, Luma Negra felt the ongoing context of high inflation, including high thermal energy costs on natural gas production and higher maintenance costs. Despite good volumes and excellent prices, the company posted an adjusted EBITDA of $66 million, still a very good level, although 16% drop year over year. Adjusted EBITDA margins went to almost 40% benefit from the sale of a non-strategic property in Olavarria. Finally, in the African Southern Cone cluster, better price and strict cost control in Mozambique offset the decline in the region, so that adjusted EBITDA came at $16 million, a 7% increase year over year. Also important to note that adjusted EBITDA margin was up by 2 percentage points and reached 25%. Therefore, we continue to see difficulties popping up in one country offset by the positive development in the other country. All in all, it is too premature to say that cost inflation is losing steam, but we can certainly say that we continue to manage properly our price and go-to-market policy in the different markets under the current macro context.
Thanks, Paulo. Interesting to see that, despite the unfavorable cost rebound and uncertainties on the macro front, Intercement was able to keep a robust top line of $1.8 billion and a healthy EBITDA level of $476 million in the year. Moving now to the below-the-line results, let me ask you, Zangari, what can you say about this fourth quarter?
Sure, Maria. What first comes to my mind regarding our below-the-line results in the fourth quarter is definitely the cash conversion, which was quite strong due to a better management of working capital, particularly in Brazil, where the cash conversion was around 100% of its EBITDA. On a consolidated basis, we also managed to reduce our CapEx, which was basically the investment in ordinary maintenance of the operations. It was 13% lower than in 2021, as we no longer had the expansion CapEx we had in the previous year associated to the final payment of the La Mali 2 project. We also paid lower income taxes that amounted to $73 million in 2022, posting a decrease of $7 million due to lower taxable profit in all the geographic locations, except for Mozambique, where it was not a higher burden either, as taxable gains were offset against accumulated losses. As a result, our free cash flow to firm from continuing and discontinued operations reached $323 million, as shown on page 11, which is $148 million higher than last year, or 2021.
And besides working capital moves, CapEx and taxes, Zangari, any other movement below the line, including financial flows, that you could give us some additional color, please?
Yes, Maria, let's start with some financing activity. During the fourth quarter, we increased the loan taken in South Africa in $13 million and transferred such funds to the Holdco. At the Holdco, we also had a bilateral loan refinanced with HSBC amounting to $18 million. Now, looking at the interest expenses disbursement, we had the interest payment of the debentures in December amounting to $76 million, both at the Holdco and also at Interestment Brazil. And we can see on page 11 that our interest expenses totaled $222 million during the year, with an increase of $111 million driven by a higher debt position in Argentina and higher interest rates on the debentures, as the average CDI, the base interest rate in Brazil, was 12.6% in 2022 versus 4.8% in 2021. Lastly, during the year, we had a $81 million payment of dividends, mostly from Loma Negra to its minority shareholders, around $61 million, and the remainder from our hydroelectric power generation businesses in Brazil to the minority preferred shareholder. In addition to it, other financing activities in the year amounted to $144 million. Of outflow, which is mostly related to the liquidation of debt in foreign currency with local funding converted to US dollars in Argentina. Reflecting all those cash movements, Tercement ended the fourth quarter of the year with a cash position of $219 million and a net debt of $1.4 billion. Posting an increase of almost 12% over our net debt position at the end of 2021. As I mentioned, this was mostly driven by the higher payment of interests and dividends, including the higher financial expense in Argentina, generated by the liquidation of debt in foreign currency with local funding, and also due to the appreciation of the Brazilian real by 6.5%. As a result, Tercement posted a financial leverage of 3x adjusted EBITDA, similar to the level we reached by the end of the previous year.
Just great to see that. Despite the existing limitations, Tercement continues to manage properly its cash flow, which included dividends payment by Loma Negra. Paulo, and what about this year, 2023? Anything you might share with us?
Well, Maria, I can only say that the uncertainties we faced in our core market this year are higher than the ones we faced last year, including inflation and interest rates. In the case of Argentina, we have a very challenging and unpredictable presidential election, while in Brazil, the current government has to address a big question mark we have in terms of economic outlook. Therefore, our position for the year is very similar to the one we had last year. In other words, we'll do whatever is needed in order to defend the position we finished 2022 and, in case possible, reach operating metrics slightly better than the ones we had last year.
Thanks, Paulo. And I guess we can now break for Q&A. However, to start the session, allow me to shoot a couple of questions in different directions that I believe are important to our audience. Let me just start by asking you, Zangari. The cash breakdown of the different perimeters at the end of 2022.
Certainly, Maria. As shown on page 11, we ended the quarter with a consolidated cash position of $219 million. Out of that amount, we had $115 million at Intercement Brazil, $28 million at Loma Negra in Argentina, $31 million at the African cluster, already excluding Egypt, and $45 million at the corporate level or holdcos.
Thank you, Zander. On another topic, I saw that Luma Negra had its earnings call with the market on March 9, while Intersemente Brasil filed its fourth quarter results with CVM on March 18. I'm curious to know the reason why Intersemente Participações released its fourth quarter results only on March 31st. Can you help me out?
Maria, very good catch, especially considering that Argentina and Brazil are our core markets. The main reason for that is that Intersemente Holdings, ICP, has two new board members sitting on our board of directors. Therefore, these new board members had to spend and speed up their learning curve about the company. As professional board members, that also implied a deep scrutiny on the financial statements to be released, and coupled by some conflict of agendas, only on March 31st we were able to file the 2022 financials. So, in a nutshell, this was a totally one-off event, very unlikely to repeat again.
Okay, thanks, Paulo. And now, looking at Loma Negra earnings release on March 9, we see an adjusted EBITDA of $91 million for the fourth quarter and of $289 million for the full year of 2022. However, today, looking at Intersemente Holding Company figures released on March 31st, we see Loma Negra with an adjusted EBITDA of $66 million for the quarter and $253 million for the year. I know that inflation can cause some distortions in the figures, but can you comment a bit on this so that we can better understand the situation?
Maria, I guess you got the main reason for that. Needless to say that high inflation per se brings some distortions to the figures. It's also easy to note that when inflation rate and currency devaluation are decoupled, for instance, when inflation is much higher than currency depreciation, this distortion tends to increase. Therefore, this difference for adjusted EBITDA comes mainly from conversion mechanism. In other words, it has to do with the way Luma Negra presents its figure in U.S. dollars. Note that for statutory reasons, Luma Negra is obliged to present its financials only in pesos, ARS, something according to the requirements of New York Stock Exchange. However, in order to give a better flavor of its figures in U.S. dollars for investors, thus it may be a bit confusing to follow the high inflationary financial in pesos, the company takes its financials in pesos for any given period and convert them into U.S. dollars using the historical pesos amount converted into U.S. dollars using the average exchange rate. As you will note, Luma is using this methodology for years now, and it certainly provides some reasonable comparability in terms of Luma Negra's figures in U.S. dollars. On the other hand, at Intersemente Holding level, when we consolidated Luma Negra financials, we are obliged to follow IAS 21, that is IFRS conversion rules for an inflationary environment. Therefore, we take Luma Negra financials in pesos, which is Luma's functional currency, and adjust the financials by inflation using the proper monetary adjustments as required by IAS 21, paragraph 42, to convert it to US dollars as a reporting currency. And we use the end-of-period exchange rate for that. In other words, as Intersemente has the U.S. dollars as its reporting currency, we have to follow the proper accounting rules for IAS. Needless to say that as inflation grows and the FX parity with inflation is decoupled, this difference on both methodologies tends to increase. However, it's important to note that the free cash flow result and ending cash position is the same for both methodologies. Hope that contributed a bit to understand the impacts of a high inflationary. And again, I apologize for such a distortion. This may cause from time to time.
Thank you, Paulo. Very clear now. Another point I'm interested about is with regards to loans. In general, of cement companies, especially players in Brazil. That is to say that at the same time that we see loans of other cement players holding their value in a challenging environment, we see inter-cement bonds being corroded to a questionable level. Can you have your view on this situation?
I guess you are totally right, especially considering the same difficult environment for Brazil, the core market for both players. So in terms of a 23 outlook, Brazilian players should be cautious on weaker GDP growth, inflation, and high interest rates. Also valid for any Brazilian player is the constant challenge to manage its pricing policy to offset higher costs and low volumes. In that regard, Intercement is exceeding the cement players quarter after quarter, while performing performance in Argentina is really stuck on 2 months. Therefore, despite the rating performance, it seems that geographic diversification into developed countries does count. However, it does count more for a bond to hold its value, to have a strong liquidity, a low leverage, and investment grade. In other words, despite the superior performance quarter after quarter in Brazil, our leverage capital structure, besides the maturity of our bonds in July 24, and the call option banks have under the ventures in May 24, are putting an enormous burden on our bonds. In fact, just recently, when Fitch decided to downgrade our bonds to CCC, based on the current challenge environment, as no new fact was presented with regards to its Intercement itself. At the same time, we are confident that with the 24 bonds refinancing addressed, the bond value will also be correct by the market. So in a nutshell, Maria, great question, and perhaps it should be easier to answer just by saying, I mean, who said that life is fair? But it was important to expand a bit the simple answer.
Okay, thanks, Paulo. And as it was mentioned, Intercement sold its operation in Egypt last January. Can you give us some more color on this M&A disposal?
Oh, yes, Maria. We have signed an NDA so that for the time being, we are not allowed to disclose the name of the buyer, neither the amount paid. We had a similar situation when we sold the Portuguese operations to the OEM group from Turkey. However, sometime later, we were able to talk about the value involved. Anyway, just as a flavor, taking a look at the indebtedness of the holding company perimeter by year end, we can see that there was $550 million in bonds, another $2 billion Brazilian reais in the ventures, besides 100 million Brazilian reais bilateral with HSBC and 70 million reais bilateral with BNP Paribas. Looking at the holding company indebtedness today, we continue to have those $550 million in bonds. The ventures balance has dropped to 1.8 billion Brazilian reais. The bilateral of 100 million reais with HSBC continues there, although the bilateral with BNP Paribas has been settled. Therefore, one can guess the amount involved in such disposal in a reasonable way. Also important to note that the economic situation in Egypt continues to deteriorate rapidly. In fact, the government has depreciated the Egyptian pound by 90% in the last 12 months, been 50% in the last 3 months, ending in January. Recently, the overnight lending rate was placed at around 19%, so that we foresee a rockish bias over the coming months to cope with inflation. Inflation is expected to remain elevated as well. Additionally, the cement sector continues to be very volatile, as the current stability will last for as long as the Egyptian government keeps the current production quotas. In summary, we believe it was the right time to divest such operation.
Thank you, Zangari. And just expand this last question. How do you see the other African assets, that is, South Africa and Mozambique?
Maria, as we all know, JP Morgan has been hired to assess the strategic options available for our African assets. Naturally, that with the divestment of Egypt, some other strategic options are having their value questioned, such as the Africa and Operations IPO option at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, which we've been assessing and commenting during our calls. At the same time, we continue to be committed to present our recommended strategic option to our board by mid-year. This is where we are putting our focus now.
Thanks again, Gary. And considering all the different plates you have in your hands, Paul, where do we stand with regard to the 24 bonds refinancing?
Maria, we have not changed our strategy. We see a sizable asymmetry between bondholders and the venture holders, which are the three local banks, Bradesco, Itaú, and Banco do Brasil. We continue to see that any refinancing, including a potential exchange offer, should provide better economics to investors, reasonable collateral, and result in higher liquidity and appreciation for the loans. This is what is driving our actions. At the same time, the banks in Brazil were heavily hurt by some companies that filed for RJ, Recuperação Judicial, and RE, Recuperação Extra Judicial. Therefore, the whole banking environment became much more selective, and credit has been contracted drastically, not to say that it has disappeared. Fortunately, in case of Intercement, no new money is needed. We are talking about extending the current maturity of our bonds. Therefore, in order to accomplish that, we do need some flexibility from our banks to adjust some points in our debentures. Unfortunately, so far, we have not made the progress we expect towards our banks. That means that we may face some more delays.
Okay, Paulo, and thanks. Now, let me also open the floor to other questions from our investors, analysts, and bankers. I'd like to remember all that you may send your questions via webcast.
So, guys, our first question comes from Marcelo Lampadans from Itaú BBA. Basically, would like to know what we can expect in terms of cement volumes and prices in Brazil for the first quarter of this year. If we can expect some tailwind coming from the infrastructure sector.
Marcelo, we see Intercement Brazil performing slightly better than the industry in this first quarter this year again, in terms of volumes, especially cement volumes. When we account also for clinker volumes, we see it decreasing slightly in comparison to last year, same quarter. But still, it's just a slight decrease year over year. And we see that we can still expect some tailwinds, yes, coming from the infrastructure sector, especially with regards to those programs that were started by the previous government in terms of new concessions, privatizations that led to a big pipeline of investments, private investments to the infrastructure in Brazil. But that may still take some months to hit ground. And in terms of prices, you also asked us, in Brazil, we see it suffering a little bit in the southeast region here in Brazil, which is the largest economic region. So it's imposing some pressure in comparison to the previous quarter in terms of the mix of pricing in Brazil, despite the fact that in the other regions, prices are still stable or still picking up a little bit. But as we are saying before, that should not be a major problem for results as cost is also softening. Okay, next question is from Nicholas from Jefferies. Refinancing strategy for the 24 notes. How are the talks with the banks around the collateral package? Should they expect the refinancing before July?
Yeah, I guess that this is a very good question. I would say $1 zillion question because we have been trying to come to, you know, a feasible, I would say, conditions in order to make the whole exchange offer physical to all the different parts that are involved, including the debentures hold. But somehow, even if we do understand that banks are having a kind of hard time due to, you know, some happenings that we are seeing here in the Brazilian market, we really do not understand why it takes so long for them to move. Needless to say that with the current pace, I guess that you know, down the road, the cement itself could become a problem to them. This is why, again, we don't see a reason why you know, we should have this delay. I guess that the company has no problems in terms of solvency. And, of course, it could have a problem of liquidity next year in case, you know, it's not a refinanced business. But hopefully common sense would pop up and hopefully we could have something before we have to move our bonds from long-term to short-term.
Now we are taking Pedro Camargo's question on the maturity that we have in May, the bilateral $19 million. If we have started negotiation with the creditor to show over?
Yeah, I guess it's important to see that this $19 million loan is from HSBC. HSBC is one of the banks that are with us structuring the bonds refinancing. On the top of that, they do have a very, very good view about InterCement. They do know where we are driving the company. Therefore, I would expect to have that loan rolled over. But at the same time, as it's not a huge amount, because we have to settle it and we will settle it. But I guess HSBC is a partner bank.
Pedro Camargo also asked about the trade receivable sold in December by InterCement Brazil. If you can give more color on that, does InterCement Brazil have plans to replicate the operation along 2023?
Well, this is a sort of a transaction that we do not plan in anticipation for it. I guess depends on how the market.
Sorry.
So let me restart the talk here. What I was going to say was that basically we do not plan in anticipation for that. This is a kind of operation that we decide to do it very late in the year, depending on how a lot of things are moving, especially where we have the level of our receivables, especially if there is some kind of interest in buying petcoke or anticipate the purchase of any raw material. Depends on also how the suppliers, they are extending or not their selling terms. Therefore, based on all that, we decided if the company should sell part of their receivables on a no-recourse basis or not. Therefore, again, it would be too premature to say anything about December of this year. But this is a kind of, as we keep saying, if you would like, as a comparison, a kind of revolving line, a kind of overdraft account in case the company needs to access market.
Yeah. Next question from Eliseo Lahain-Viel. Do you have the obligation to prepay the ventures with the proceeds or asset from asset sales?
Yeah, basically, we do have a kind of a waterfall in our ventures. And basically, the indentures of the ventures is a little bit more specific. But basically, we would have up to 360 days in order to decide to use those funds in order to do an investment in the cement business, or in order to take down the indebtedness, starting with the debentures itself, and any other loan that is part also with the debentures. Okay. This is in a nutshell the waterfall that we have to follow, and only after that, in case there is anything left, we would start to purchase the bonds.
Yeah. And he also asked if we amortized the ventures during the first quarter this year. And the answer is yes, we did. The decrease in the ventures payment that you mentioned in the footnotes of page 12 of the presentation is related to the scheduled amortization or the extraordinary one related to assets sold. We prepaid the amortization we had scheduled for June, so we don't have that any longer at the holdco. And the schedule following December onwards is still the same as original one. And still continuing from itself. In order to raise that in Loma Negra, do you need any authorization from the venture holders? Do they receive the dividends since the shares are pledged to them?
Yeah, good question, because it's a way here to make sure to say out loud that Loma Negra is a kind of listed company, and therefore it's responsible for its own actions. There's no restriction from outside Loma Negra with regards to their action. Of course, as a controlling shareholder, we can vote in any decision. But again, the company is different in that regard. Therefore, there's no need of any authorization from the venture holders, bondholders, or whoever holders in order to Luma Negra to take any decision. Okay. And of course, once dividends are paid, our share, now around 52%, is basically up to Intersmith Holdings to decide how to use those funds. There's no obligation to pay down the ventures.
Paulo, Ariel from FinTech is also asking about refinancing, saying that given the different positions that bondholders and bank creditors have regarding a maturity extension, how are we planning to cram down bond-holding minorities that might not be willing to accept a longer maturity?
Well, I guess it's important to say that any exchange offer always will have holdouts. However, the trick here is making sure that we can reduce that to a minimum by incentivizing the ones that are going to exchange their bonds and somehow to penalize the ones that are not going to be exchanging and going to bring their money down the roads. But again, this is something that always we have to be very, very careful, but mainly by incentivize the ones that are going to accept the exchange offer.
Okay, now the question is over. And Paulo and Zanga, many thanks for this interesting fireside chat.
Yes, Maria, absolutely. Thank you again for hosting this and look forward to coming back in some months, pretty short, to present our year and our next quarter results. Thank you all.
Yeah, Maria Zangari, pleasure to spend the morning talking about Intersmith to our investors, analyst bankers, and other stakeholders. Many thanks for being with us, and see you next earnings call. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you all for joining today, and have a pleasant day. Goodbye.